It is May the 25th, 2024. I'm Chris.
I'm back.
And this is The Future of Photography.
The Future of Photography.
I missed you guys. Adrian, hello. Jeremiah.
It was rough without you, but we muddled through.
Yeah. No, welcome I'm back. Really happy. I'm really happy to be back. I was also very happy when I was gone because of what I did. So it's with a crying and a laughing face that I'm back.
Oh, that's okay. Yes, all right. Well, you know, it makes it nicer to come back if you've had a bit of a break, isn't it? So yeah. Not that this is ever a chore, this podcast. This is always one of the high points of my week, you know. It's like, oh, brilliant. I've got to do TFOP today. That's fantastic. Excellent. Really love it.
Yeah. So, yeah, what I was doing was I held a workshop, as every year, in the south of Germany in an old abbey. And it's probably my favorite thing to do, usually around May sometime, and this year again we were 30 people in total, 27 participants, and 3 teachers, and it was a lot of hands-on, and that's what I want to talk about today. So just to give you an idea, here's a little behind the scenes kind of video. One of the participants documented the entire thing and put stuff online. So
well, that's lucky. That video was almost my pick of the week. So
no, but
sorry, good job I chose something else.
It was really good because it showcases a few things that I want to talk about. But before we go there, I want to talk about something else, and that is something that became clear to me during the workshop. It's about AI and photography. So,
okay.
Never talked about that before.
Well, and I don't really want to talk about AI here, at least not today. But just the other day, I watched a video of someone talking about AI in music, because you might have heard the systems now that can pretty much spit out a track with its own lyrics about anything in any style. And these things sound really good. And there's a guy who did a YouTube video where he talks about that, about the technology, about the results, and then he also interviews Rick Beato. Beato is a musician, a producer, and he has a very, very well-known music YouTube channel and has a lot of opinions about things and also plays with everything that's out there. So, and they talked about a few things that I think are really very parallel to photography. I mean, we can agree that photography will be in parts taken over by AI. That's a given when we look at stock photography, when we look at some other things. But one thing I noticed on the workshop is that still, even with AI being as good as it is now, even now, AI only surfaced once in an entire week of workshop. And it did not surface as photography, but as audio. So the guy who does the interview with Rick Beato asks him about if he thinks music will go away. And the answer is very, very obviously also compatible with photography, because he says, of course not. I love playing the guitar. I love picking up the guitar and making music. And whatever that these systems create, I will still love picking up a guitar. And that's what happens on the workshop. Everyone wants to do photography. That's why they're there. So photography
As a hands-on medium
is here to stay, and that is very obvious.
Sure it is.
Also, well, I mean, they also talk about income, musicians' income, and that will certainly change.
Chris, about output, because we're very used to printing, instead of, you know, using a machine, just sending it through. That's pretty much hands off rather than getting your hands wet in chemicals. And there's a joy to the hands on in creating the final image as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then at the same time, when he gets asked if he's excited in any way about AI, he says, of course I am. Because it in music, it'll take away a lot of the chores, like doing a rough mix of a track, doing mastering, these kind of things. AI can do really well, and it will certainly take over these fields. So,
and also, this is relevant both to photography and to music.
Yes.
Is the idea that we are trying to recreate music in the style or conditions that we are used to, whether it's symphonic, whether it's rock, pop, rap, you know, with the lyrical assumptions associated with that. Instead of going to the tools to say, what is the next step in music? How can we use the tools as a new instrumentation? There are not that many people doing this. Holly Herndon, if you know her work, and if you don't, I would encourage everybody to do a deep dive into what she and her partner are doing, both visually. But she's training her own models. She's traveling around Europe. She spent a lot of time in Berlin. She traveled around Europe and recording choirs, chorales, in various ways, and then processes it in her own model to create music that is, I'm going to say, more unique than anything else that I have heard with AI. Some of it pleasant, some of it odd, but new nonetheless. And I think that artists, not necessarily commercial artists who are there to emulate, you can use that to create a jingle or whatnot. But when you're using those tools to push the levels of what is possible, what you have not seen or heard before, then it becomes very interesting rather than generic.
So lots of parallels to photography. I found this video very interesting, and especially the take on music that Rick Beato has. So that link goes in the show notes. And then back to photography, we played with a ton of things. One of the hallmarks of that workshop is that there's a lot of freedom for smaller groups to do their own projects. So groups of 2, 3, 4 people decide what they want to work on during that week with the goal of presenting it on the Friday in front of probably 70 people, and it's a big, I'd say, a big creative playground of sorts, and it also yields a good mix of different styles of photography projects, some more tech focused, some more composition focused, lots of exploration going on. There was also a parallel workshop at the same time for wood sculpture. So there were people working on their sculptures for the entire week, and that there's a lot of cross-pollination going on there during that week. And I would like to bring up two projects that were quite impressive. And the first one is a large format camera. I've already posted that in our Discord, so you've probably seen that. But so there's this group, and they have agreed before what they wanted to do, but just in a rough way. One of the guys had access to a trailer, and the trailer is one of those drink sales kind of places, you know, with a big window on the side, and they decided to turn that into a camera, into a super large format camera. And it was so amazing what these guys managed to pull together in just a few days there. So they went to a DIY store, they bought a big wooden board to close one of the windows because they couldn't drill a hole in the wall. And for lens, they tried with a large format lens that didn't work because of the distance to the film, and they ended up using glasses from just normal lenses, pretty much from glasses that projected at the right distance. They actually built a lens with two of these lenses, so they played with that, lots of experience there. And then they, as a medium, started off with positive film, as in 50 by 60 centimeters of positive film. They built a back standard from a rolling desk, from a rolling office chair, and a flip chart that they glued together. So a lot of improvisation, but they ended up taking portraits of a lot of people. They ended up doing the group shot with that thing. And just watching that process of problem solving over and over again, how do we get a hole in there? What kind of lenses do we have at our disposal? How do we fix the film at the right spot? They ended up using that whole trailer as a dark room. So someone was inside the camera fixing everything and then developing. It was like one of these Afghan box cameras.
Yeah.
But in large.
That's amazing. Looks amazing. Yeah, so really, the video as well.
with little people inside the camera.
With little people doing the work.
But Bayard like would have been very, very proud.
Probably, right? Yeah. It's just if you've had the experience of like someone converting a room into a pinhole camera, which is fairly easy. You just need black foil and some tape and close it up, and then you see everything that's outside upside down on the other side in the room. Being in there was like that, because the picture was projected with a huge wide angle, so you ended up having like an image circle that covered the walls and the floor and everything. And it was an amazing hands-on experience. But just having some time, having an environment that allows you to play, and that ended up becoming one of my favorite projects there. Not to diminish all the others that were excellent, but that one was just very notable because you couldn't not notice it. So hands on,
fantastic.
So everybody, go out, get a trailer, build a camera, and live inside it.
And I think we all have some similar experiences. I mean, Jeremiah, you do a lot of printing. You do a lot of experimentation with hands-on things. Adrian, you and your wife, you do a lot of hands-on with her Etsy store.
Yeah, we do. Yep.
So, what does that do to you by making something with your hands?
Slows you down, that's for sure.
Oh, I think it's way more than that for me. No, I mean, yes, it does. But I think for me, it's an incredible thing for mental well-being and for creativity and using different parts of your brain and of course, your body as well. You know, making things with your hands or whatever it might be, it adds a totally different experience to life for me. As somebody who spends too much of his time in front of a computer, those sorts of things are my escapism, right? So those are the things I do, because that helps me ground myself in the real world. And if photography is all part of this as well, it's just the other thing that really lets you reset and calm down and process and all sorts of stuff. So for me, it's a huge part of what I do.
Don't you think you have to be ultra present to do a physical activity? In other words, you can't be really distracted if you're working on something with just a modicum of sophistication. You can't be doing two things at once. You have to focus on you know, if you're mitering a corner, you know, you can't just like slough it off. It's got to be exactly the right angle or it won't work. And so I think that the physical processing is something that roots us. When I say slow down, I'm not just talking about in time. It just focuses our attention on the here and now. And I think that's a calming and delightful influence that we often have moved quite far away from.
Yeah, for me, it was the entire week, even though I didn't do much in terms of the hands-on thing, because I was holding the workshop, I was organizing, I was making sure everyone had the ability to do things and had the means to do that. For me, it was still like a vitamin injection. Just being around people who enjoy doing something with their hands. That was a really good experience. Another project that we did, which wasn't, not really a project, more of a toy, a playground thing. Have you guys heard of the Foldscope?
No, I don't think I have, actually.
There's a professor at Stanford who invented with his group a foldable microscope.
Ooh, which is interesting.
Which is, I think producing that costs them about $1. They have sold, they have given away like a million or more to third world countries, to kids, to even scientists in the field. Because that thing is not just cheap. If you buy them, they finance them giving away some of them. But that thing, they had to invent some new math to come up with a lens that can do 140x magnification.
Okay, interesting.
And you end up with having a proper, almost proper microscope with you anywhere. So we ended up using that for photography, as in, let's find some abstract stuff out there. Might be hair, might be pollen, might be fibers, might be a wing of an insect. I wasn't sure if it would work, but everyone ended up loving it. So my recommendation is, if you have kids or if you have a kid inside yourself, then the Foldscope is a brilliant little piece of kit that will give you a lot of rewarding, a very rewarding way of looking at your surroundings. And you can hold a smartphone up to it and take pictures straight from the thing. So it is fun. So Foldscope.com.
This has got to be like part of the special sauce of having a residential workshop of this type, for me. Because, tell me if I'm wrong here, Chris, but the creativity, the innovation, the new things that you'd learn. Oh, I've never heard of that. I don't think and yes, the internet helps us learn, but there's nothing quite like learning from a group of like-minded people, is there?
Oh, and seeing them problem solve again, because and exchanging their findings, because that thing, you need 20 minutes of playtime with it to figure out how to hold it and how to operate it and how to get photos out of it. So there is an initial hurdle that will take, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 minutes for you to be comfortable with working with it. And just seeing the group help each other, work with each other and come up with like amazing results. Within 20 minutes, someone had their LED lights, their RGB LED lights out to backlight something in red. And people were like going around finding a puddle to get some water with stuff in it. Someone got a needle and poked a hole in his finger to look at his blood cells.
Okay, a little extreme.
Not recommended, but it's. I remember as a kid, I had a microscope for like a year, my grandfather's old microscope, and it changed the way I see the world. So just having that available and looking at things back home. So that experience, I try to give that experience to others, and it's a fun little toy, and it's more than a toy. So last but not least, someone brought a photo transfer kit of sorts. Have you heard of gelatin prints?
That's so funny. I've been researching that all
really?
Week. This is completely coincidental with the jelly plate, they call it.
Exactly. So yeah. So jelly plate, it's from a crafts from a crafts point of view, a lot of it's used a lot in scrapbooking and things like that. But it also lends itself really well to doing photo transfers, as in take a photo and work with it, work it into something new. And then what comes out are things like this.
Yeah.
So you end up with a different medium, and working with it again takes a bit of training, but not much. The entry hurdle is very, very low, financially very low. You can get these plates for $20-$30, I guess, and you need some acrylic color and a roller and some a laser printer helps, because laser prints work really well with it, and then you end up copying things in a way that is very satisfying.
Did anybody try it with Polaroid?
No, not yet. But the entire group that did that, they ended up with totally getting lost in the jelly prints.
Also, there's different mediums that you can use without the jelly block.
Yes.
Which is, you know, you just basically coat the paper,
and yeah,
then
so
you get a transfer of a
lots of different ways, yeah, and
Pictorico.
But this one ended up being like really accessible. That's the thing. A lot of these techniques are a bit daunting, because you need like very special chemicals and a dark room and I don't know, tools, and they are difficult. I mean, just look at brome oil print, for example. Amazing results, but it takes you months to get good at it. You're probably up and running in an hour, and you get amazing results. So it's funny that you researched that this week. How come?
You know, I ran across an image, and it was very watercolor. It was on very dense watercolor paper, and it had a really interesting photographic yet painterly way. And I went, well, I wonder how they did that. Yeah. And so I just did a little dive into it and found, I'd never heard of a jelly plate before a week ago. And I was actually kind of backing in, because I'm about to do some digital negatives on Pictorico,
mm-hmm.
you know, transparent, and try to do some gravure off that. So that was my kind of going in. So, of course, I went into the deep dive about getting the best results from Pictorico, which is a transparent medium that you can use on a Giclée printer. And that led me from one thing to another. And, of course, then it was like, oh, jelly plate printing from Pictorico negatives? Like, what the heck? And so it was like, you know, one step down at a time before you were in the sub-basement. And absolutely fascinating. And it turns out, you know, I have a roller and I have some medium. I don't have a jelly plate yet, but they're available just at the corner art shop. I
mean, exactly. You know, they're like a half an inch thick gelatin-like plate that is reusable. So you have this thing and you use it over and over. You clean it off. And if you practice a bit, you can do amazing stuff with it. And yeah, you can work in layers, as in you have like a black and white photo of something, and then you can put backgrounds behind it and so on. It's like Photoshop, but in a very physical, very hands-on way.
Yeah.
So,
like, for example, you take a picture like this and just a light coat of, you know, very transparent paint, color, medium, and then do it again and you'll get an overlay in that way.
Yeah. So collages, these kind of things are, it's made for that. It's totally made for that.
And so, then so if you... I'm interested, because there's loads of really good stuff here. You've got like four or five different things you've been talking to us about. How does this make you feel, right? How do you, coming out of one of these workshops, what's going on in your heart and in your mind?
I'm very, very happy and satisfied that other people are having fun, because that extends into me having fun. So, facilitating these kind of things is my thing. So that, and just seeing other people learn something new and enjoy learning it, I think
I mean clearly this is a working holiday. It's not even a holiday, it's just work, isn't it, for you? But in the best possible way.
I come back fully recharged.
That's the thing. You see, are you I know you won't have time to pursue your own projects in that environment because you're the leader of the group, but do you come back full of energy, fully inspired to, you know, lots of ideas of things you want to try? Do you come home, like run into the shed, hammer and nails and bits of wood and build your own cameras and stuff like that? Is that what happens next?
Possibly.
It was just an example. You can choose your own project, obviously.
No, I mean what I find really wonderful is that it gets me in touch with a lot of ideas. And you know how you find, how you get up a ton of input? Go on YouTube and just let the algorithm serve you things, and you get a ton of input, and a lot of that is very fleeting, because yes, you might learn something new, a new technique, but seeing it in the field, in action, is a completely different thing. It's a different animal. So the virtual nature of things is amazing, because you get confronted with a lot of things online, but in the real world, taking it out of the virtual world changes everything. So I come home with a lot of experiences, a lot of new things that even if I won't do them right away, it's now clearly part of my arsenal, and I can pull that out because I've seen it, I've touched it, I've worked with some of it. So,
you know, on the electronic end of it, on the digital end of it, and this is something that I'm kind of actively trying to figure out the best way to apply it to my own process, is building my own model. You know, I've talked about this before. Do I build it with 15 to 30 images? Do I build it with several hundred? Do I build the images out of a consistent style? Do I kind of amalgamate everything that I've done? And so experimenting with various sizes of model for my own, because I'm very interested in how my work influences my work, if that makes sense. And so you kind of, you know, I've been doing that. Yeah, I'll take an image and I will kind of conceptualize it, write it out, and further conceptualize the language, apply it to, say, GPT or this week, GPT Omni. Take that, I could generate something, I could take a prompt, I can move it to Midjourney, to Leonardo, and move it through various models that make a unique piece. And I'm trying to get the rough edges exposed so that there's not a sense of generic. And that feels to me as close as I could get to an actual physical building a camera. But, you know, it's basically building a processor or a path to process with something that is unique to your experience and output. And So there are kind of parallels to that. And at a certain point, how does that fuse into the real world? And, you know, for me, that's output printing, whether it's gravure, platinum, you know. I saw a show this week, saw a lot of photo work this week of somebody doing modern daguerreotypes at a gallery of Yosemite, a Chinese photographer. They are absolutely incredible. They're printed on like polished chrome. And so they are exquisite. I mean, they're exquisite. And in another gallery, I saw the prints of I guess they were printed on pure copper, which is something that I've been doing. Not pure copper, but copper plate. But, you know, just the kind of fusing of different kind of modern and old technologies is something that is extraordinary and really, really fun. So I'm also very...
I hear an airplane. Keep going.
It's Venice, California, right? It's sirens and choppers and planes and squirrels. I'm very interested in how the kind of hands-on DIY feel can rough the edges of AI to produce more human-like content that affects us emotionally. I think that's really interesting because most of what I see tends to slide into slick, generic, and kind of that mid-range of emulation of an aesthetic and trying to get away from that, both music and visual is something that it's very easy to do that when you're just working with a handmade camera and coated film because it is a unique experience. You're never going to coat the same chemical density twice. It's just almost
making one-of-a-kind things is also very satisfying. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that's
that might be the takeaway from this episode. Do something with your hands.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely. And with other people as well, because it sounds like the group experience is clearly
a massive part of it.
Yeah, yeah. So,
yes.
I think good stuff.
All right. So, the future is next year. May the 19th is the next workshop in the Abbey. So,
that sounds good. That sounds good. And the future of photography clearly involves working with your friends and working with cameras and other bits of equipment that you can build and stuff like that.
Yes.
Very little to do with technology at all.
All right. Let's switch this over to our picks of the week. I am going to look at Adrian first. What are we looking
at? Okay. So, well, this week I bring you advance notice of an exhibition. Actually, I say advance notice. It's probably only about 3 days advance notice. So the fashion photographer Rankin is conducting an exhibition at the moment called Back in the Dazed, which is an exhibition of his fashion photography from 1991 to 2001. Something I should try and get tickets to see. Although having said that, so how many times do you try and book to try and go see a photo gallery and you actually have to book a slot like you were at Disney World or the Pokemon Championships?
I'm just looking at the weird booking process here. You have like different dates into June and you click and then there are different slots and you have to like... Why is that?
He's expecting it to be popular.
Popular exhibits, you want to make sure that you have the time to wander a gallery and be able to see the work instead of standing behind five people's heads and struggling to do so.
Very true. Absolutely.
Spend time. So they do that in order to make sure that the gallery is never overcrowded and that you could really explore that.
All right.
So, yeah, so that's a show coming up in London, of course. It's probably maybe not obvious to everybody, but Rankin is British and he operates out of London. So,
that helps. Adrian, I just want you to know that on the show that I will open mid-July here in Los Angeles. You don't have to book.
Excellent.
That's good.
You just show up whenever you want. You just show up.
So, okay. Jeremiah, your pick.
Well, speaking
is
of booking,
another exhibition.
Speaking of booking, first I'll talk about the Getty, which is, you know, arguably one of the most amazing centers of photographic research in the world, and their collection is nothing short of dazzling. I went to see this exhibit, which really was profound. It's called 19th Century Photography Now. So you're able to look at these extraordinary images, all done with old and traditional techniques, whether it's bromide, salt, you know, daguerreotypes, canotypes. And over the years, the history of photography is there with classics of, you know, again, from Bayard, Daguerre, Nadar, all of those amazing, their work. And then artists who are using those exact techniques in creating new work. And so you have, you know, you go and look at three or four amazing images of a historical landscape. And next to it, you'll have three or four artists working in that same technique. And so it bridges the gap of, you know, a century and a half of photography and photography processes that is just completely inspired. And I found myself like, and again, it's the Getty, so you have to book in advance, and it's a popular exhibit, but I found, you know, maybe there were 20 people in this exhibit, you know, looking. And so you're able to spend a lot of time in front of all of these images and really absorb them. And I think that's also the difference between looking at something online on your phone, where we have an instinct, a tendency now to just keep swiping more and more and more. But when you're in the presence of some of these, it's the opposite. You want to stay and you want to study and you want to look carefully. You want to look at the soles of a subject's shoe or just the way they, their environment. There's a detailing which is really extraordinary in the presence. But this is an exhibit. I do hope it travels because it's sensational. At the same time, right across the you know, in the next museum, the Getty is, you know, huge. There was an exhibit of Bayard, which, you know, I won't talk about today, but is also an amazing and you know, a photographer of note.
Arguably the inventor of photography.
So there's a lot of stuff to deal with Bayard in terms of stuff for another day.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right. So I brought a YouTube video, and it is again from the channel Smarter Every Day. And Destin is a bit of a film buff, and he did this 3-part series of looking behind the scenes at Kodak and doing like looking at how film is made in a very, very detailed, like 3-hour thing, which is amazing. And he just went to see the solar eclipse, and he teamed up with a professor who is very, like, super into that. And they came up with an idea that he then executed, and that was to photograph the solar eclipse in phases, as in you get the sun becoming more smaller and smaller and smaller, and then the totality and so on, but to do it on slide film, as in on one piece of film. So he goes out and ends up like really planning that, because you have one piece of film and all these phases have to go on, so you need a specific times to make it symmetrical and a nice composition. And so he has that timer running and people around him and his family, and while enjoying also taking these pictures and not being sure how it turned out. So he ended up of course nailing it, and it it's just a great, also well told story. So, of what you can do with film and what it means to do something like that with film. So, I found this a very good watch.
I shall go and watch that then, definitely.
Absolutely. Link is, of course, link to all the things we talked about are in the show notes. And with that, let's start the outro music. So, do something with your hands. It's very simple.
Well, now?
Well, everyone, after listening to this episode, do something with it. It might be gardening. It might be something else. But
for what it's worth, I spent most of the day shifting and hauling furniture. So I've absolutely been working with my hands and
lots
more, of
muscles. That's more a do something with your back.
yes. Well, tomorrow. Yeah. Absolutely. So it's. Yeah. But it is. It's a good. It's a good kind of a day, right? Doing that.
All
sort
right.
of thing. It's definitely different.
We'll be back next week with another episode of The Future of Photography. Thanks everyone for being here. Find us online, come to our Discord. Until then, everyone, take care. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Future of Photography. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your other podcasts. Find the show notes and more information at thefutureofphotography.com.